Welcome to The Waves, Slate's podcast about gender, feminism, and all the political turmoil that comes with smashing the patriarchy. Every episode, you get a new pair of women to talk about the thing we just can't get off our minds. And today you've got me, Nicole Lewis, senior editor of jurisprudence at Slate.
And me, Emily Peck, I'm markets correspondent at Axios and also co-host of Slate Money.
Today, we are talking about reproductive rights. We're talking about abortion. We're talking about Roe v. Wade. We're talking about the Supreme Court and the leak that rocked the nation. I've been assigning and editing stories in response to Sam Alito's horrifying draft majority opinion that would ultimately upend Roe v. Wade and people's constitutional right to an abortion. One of the things that really struck me about the opinion, and there were so many things, but one of the major things is that Alito said he couldn't assess the impact abortion has on society and in the lives of women. You know, and it kind of makes you wonder why the court should get to make such sweeping declarations about an issue they don't really understand. But here we are. So I want to make clear that actually, we do have plenty of research about the impact abortion access has on society and for women. I want to share some of that path-breaking research and analysis with you today. So, Emily, why is this issue important to you?
Reproductive rights, I mean, they just feel like a core part of my humanity as an American. I was actually born in 1973, so I've never lived in a world without Roe versus Wade. And I have a daughter, and to think that she is going to grow up and live in a world without that bedrock is upsetting to me. I think she will have fewer rights, fewer options than I will. That's infuriating. Also, diving deep into some of those economic studies, some of the studies you were just talking about, it's aggravating, to say the least, to read Alito saying he doesn't know what abortion's impact was on women or society. That's ridiculous. I mean, while there may be a real debate over the morality of abortion, from a purely economic perspective, there really just isn't much question that access is good for the economy, for women, for society, and for families. In doing my reporting, I came to the conclusion that legalizing abortion was one of, if not the most, meaningful economic policies of the past half century for women. So yeah, I'm mad, Nicole.
So stay tuned. Coming up, Emily and I are going to try to contain our righteous anger and discuss what the research tells us about why having control over when to have a baby is critical. It's not just for women's well-being, but for our economy and for our democracy. Hey Waves listeners, if you're loving the show and want to hear more, subscribe to our feed. New episodes come out every Thursday morning. While you're there, check out our other episodes too, like last week's about the fall of bitch media as a sign of disastrous things to come. Welcome back to The Waves. Emily, I want to read for you the passage from Alito's draft where he says the court can't assess the impact of abortion. He says, on page 61, that it is hard for anyone, and in particular, for a court, to assess, namely, the effect of abortion right on society and in particular on the lives of women. The contending sides in this case make impassioned and conflicting arguments about the effects of abortion right on the lives of women. Seeing this as a journalist, for me, this is your classic kind of false equivalence, both sides argument that completely ignores that one side traffics in pseudoscience and religious ideology. But what really strikes me here is that he completely glosses over an amicus brief on this exact issue that was filed to the court by a pioneering economist who spent her career studying how reproductive rights affects people's lives. And so over 150 economists signed on to this brief, which I'm assuming Alito must have just thrown in the trash. And so, Emily, you're familiar with some of this work. Can you tell us a little bit more about what these economists found?
The pioneering economist, I think you mean, is Caitlin Myers at Middlebury College. And she's done some really good work kind of disaggregating abortion from other things that happened to women over the past 50 years to see what legalizing abortion actually meant for women, mostly economically. The brief filed by the 154 economists really kind of brings all this research together in kind of a groundbreaking way, because this isn't the kind of thing that economists were like buzzing about a lot in following women's issues in gender and economics. I would say it's an under-discussed issue you hear a lot about. Equal pay. There was this paper on birth control that argued birth control was what pushed more women into the workforce in the 70s and 80s. But what Myers found is actually abortion had more of an effect on women's labor force participation than birth control, which when you talk to her and she breaks it down, you're like, oh, of course. You know, when the pill was just becoming available, it wasn't available to every woman, certainly. And the women who were able to access it, it failed sometimes, doesn't always work. And when it didn't work, there was abortion waiting in the wings. So that sort of birth control combined with abortion really increased women's labor force participation and enabled women to delay motherhood. That means they could finish their education. That means they could progress in their careers and really pursue jobs and work that was more meaningful to them and more rewarding long term, like better jobs, essentially. And there's other research also in the brief that talks about an increase in wages, particularly for Black women, which I think we'll get into more in the second segment. And of course, benefits to the children who are ultimately born. Mothers saw reduced rates of poverty, reduced death rates. Kids flourish when there are less unwanted kids around. It all, just talking about it, seems so obvious, but the brief really pulls together all this research that makes it clear, like, this abortion right enabled women to fully participate in society in a way they really hadn't been able to before. And yeah, I think Alito threw it in the trash.
You know, one of the things that really strikes me from what you're saying is, one, just how obvious and kind of common sense some of these findings seem. And at the same time, how very few people were clamoring to really understand the impact, which suggests perhaps people thought this was settled and there would be no need to dredge up what seems obvious to women, maybe, and to people who love women, about the impact of abortion. But alas, again, here we are. Another thing that really strikes me from all of this research that you're bringing up is just how much some of these outcomes are things that the conservative, and in particular, the sort of Christian right, actually really champions, right? So they champion the notion of having homes that are more stable, of people being able to sort of work and provide for themselves. They look down or have their stigma against children out of wedlock. And so abortion actually serves to offer some of these more, I hesitate to call them wholesome, but they're these ideas about what our families are supposed to look like that are kind of conservative. And so it's interesting to me, right? Another one being teenage pregnancy, that's something that has been so stigmatized. And I remember, you know, growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s, just how much of a campaign there was to eliminate teenage pregnancy. It was sort of part of the popular media at the time too, right? 16 and pregnant on MTV, all these kinds of shows. And so this research is finding that actually, once again, abortion access means that we have less teenage pregnancies, something that conservative Christians, Republicans kind of harp on about. And so it's just interesting that contradiction, that abortion is actually a tool to making some of these things really possible.
Alito says there are conflicting arguments on both sides, but in this case, the Mississippi Attorney General made this to my mind, a weird argument where she basically said women have greater economic rights and more freedom now than they did when Roe v. Wade first passed, which, okay, that's true, but it's in part because of abortion. And then she goes on to say they don't need this abortion right anymore because now it's okay for women, you know, single mothers, it's okay for women to have pregnancies, I guess, out of wedlock, it's called, or it's okay to give birth because there are these laws where you can give up the baby right away, like leave it on the doorstep of the firehouse or something. I'm sorry, but she has the audacity to also say, because there are paid leave policies in the United States, which there aren't. It was just a shocking counter-argument. It's just so clear. There's no standing. Like, if you want to go to the court and argue, like, morally you think this is wrong, okay, that's a real argument. But to say that women have more freedom now, therefore they don't need this, is the same thing, you know, Justice Ginsburg is always quoted for saying, like, you don't take the umbrella away in the rainstorm. And that's still true now, even though women are, you know, labor force participation is up, it doesn't mean you get rid of this, like, core right.
So one additional thing, right? So we've talked a bit about the economics, the importance of abortion access on women's lives, on our ability to go to school and have better wages and care for the kids that we do have. But an additional point, something that's really critical to consider, is the impact of abortion access on democracy and women's ability to participate politically in society, right? And so after the leak came out and all throughout this debate, political scientists have been saying in an increasingly serious tone that restricting abortion rights is a sign of a backsliding democracy, right? And so what this means is that in most democratic countries, restricting abortion access is kind of rare. It doesn't actually happen that often. It's very rare that we progress forward and then move so quickly and so violently backwards in time, right? This has happened in other places. I'm thinking of Nicaragua and Poland, right? Two countries that have restricted access and who are simultaneously truly in both an economic and really political crisis right now. And so if Alito's opinion ultimately becomes the law of the land, you know, political scientists are saying, like, we can firmly add the United States to that list, that it's not just an insurrection in January 6th and people trying to undermine the election, but it's actually women's rights and women's ability to participate in our society that is a measure of our democratic health. So we're going to take a break here, but if you want to hear more from Emily and myself on another topic, check out our Waves Plus segment, Is This Feminist?, where today we're debating whether getting a Brazilian butt lift is feminist.
And please consider supporting the show by joining Slate Plus. Members get benefits like zero ads on any Slate podcast, no paywall on the Slate site, and bonus content of shows like Amicus, Slate Money, that's my show, and of course, this one. To learn more, go to slate.com/thewavesplus.
So like many other issues in our country, the abortion issue does not affect all women and all people equally. And this is something we saw very clearly, right? To take it back to another major issue still ongoing in the pandemic. There were so many people coming out and saying, we're all in this together, you know, we'll get through it together. And it became clear over time that the impact was most felt in poor communities and in Black communities and on frontline workers. And same is the case here. So women of color, poor women of all backgrounds, and Black women in particular, have the most to lose if abortion goes away. And they've also benefited the most by having control over their reproductive lives. And so we want to dig a little bit deeper into that. And let's start off, maybe, Emily, if you could give us, you know, a lay of the economic landscape. Like, what do we know about how abortion has impacted Black women or poor women's lives for the better?
Well, we know that those impacts that we discussed in the top half of this episode doubly impacted Black women. The research on wage increases for those who were able to get an abortion, it was Black women who saw wages go up 10%. We know Black teenage women were more likely to graduate high school. And according to research from the Amicus Brief, a 23 to 27 percentage point increase in their probability of attending college. One thing that in my reporting, economists pointed out to me is Black women have always worked. They've always had higher labor force participation rate than white women. So it's not like when Black women have children, they drop out of the workforce. They're still working. But with abortion and with reproductive rights access, they can get better jobs. And that's what you're seeing in the data. You're seeing more opportunity for advancement, educational attainment, all of that kind of like magnified for these women who are going to work regardless, or more likely to work regardless. This is sort of doubly important for them.
But this is really critical, right? Because it suggests that on the flip side, if abortion goes away, that some of those gains goes right with it, that Black women are sort of back, I don't want to say to square one, but that we are going to have a harder time breaking in, increasing wages, going to college, which we know has an incredible compounding impact on the betterment of people's lives. So it's kind of huge.
We know that Black women have higher rates of maternal mortality. We know that access to abortion declined maternal mortality rates for Black women, a huge drop, 28 to 40%, like, whoa. So really, like, forcing women to give birth is also forcing them to risk death. One of the most sort of groundbreaking abortion studies out there is this Turnaway study, where they basically looked at, it's like about 1,000 women across the country. Some were not able to get an abortion in time to meet the gestation deadline, like whether it was like 20 weeks or some places it's less than that. So they studied what happened to the women who were turned away and wound up giving birth versus the women who were able to access an abortion. And I wrote a bit about the economic piece of that study, and they found the women who were forced to give birth, you know, had higher rates of bankruptcies, evictions, liens, and they were in just dire financial straits. They also found that the women forced to give birth, among that group, two died, and among the group that accessed abortion, no one died. So that kind of gives you the sense of the stakes here. And since Black women are already sort of like, have, I guess, higher stakes or more risk, this just puts them at even higher risk.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the things that's so shocking to me about some of the maternal mortality research is that it's Black women from all class backgrounds, right? That it says something about just the severity and the seriousness of racism, structural and otherwise, in our lives. That it's that even if you're a surgeon and you're Serena Williams and you go to the hospital and you're giving birth, that doctors might not believe you. They might not give you the same level of care. And so, you know, when we think about some of the more vulnerable women, women who are struggling with housing access or, you know, working a low income job, just the effects and the consequences are so much more dire and really compounded. And I wanted to take a second, you know, to link this back to some really basic American history. So Dahlia Lithwick wrote a piece kind of connecting the dots between the 14th Amendment, which, you know, equal protection under the law, right, that everybody should be treated the same way, and the connection to forced birth, right? I think you used that phrase. And so one of the things she found is that it was very clear and very deliberate by the people who are considered the architects or the framers of the 14th Amendment that one of the things they were trying to prevent or guard against was anybody anywhere, but Black women in particular, being forced to reproduce, that was such a fundamental feature of American slavery that they said, well, what does it mean to be free? What would it mean to have liberty and autonomy? And being able to control your reproductive capacity is central to that idea, right? And so it's sort of a dark and really fascinating thing to me to think that we're here now talking about what happens to poor women and to Black women if they lose this access. And it's just something that's so deeply woven into our history, into our supposed values about liberty and freedom and autonomy, things that we, you know, talk about holding dear. This is a direct shot at really all of that.
That's painful to think about. And the one thing I maybe hasten to add is that I do see a lot of people saying, don't worry, you know, if you live in New York, you're going to be okay. If you have money, you'll be able to afford this. Like, don't worry about your daughter. You'll always pay for her to go wherever she needs to go. But I think it's really important. Like, everyone is losing this, right? Everything has become more difficult. I'm not going to stay in my little New York bubble all the time. I'm going to have to travel. You're going to have, like, this affects everyone. I think that's important to point out, too.
You know, we've really want to disabuse people of that notion that they will somehow be protected because of privilege or class or money. Let's really understand what we're looking at more clearly, right? This is just the first right to potentially fall, right? That the framework that Alito sets up, the way that they're going about it, suggests to us, who people who are watching the court and in the legal community, that they actually have many other rights in their crosshairs. And so if we stop paying attention because we say, oh, it doesn't affect me, it doesn't apply to me, well, that might be true today, but it might not be true tomorrow and in the coming weeks, right? And so I think it's really critical that even if you don't have a uterus, that you really plug in and pay attention to what this draft is suggesting, what it's telling us. We are going backwards. We are not headed into some sort of like new reality in which, oh, the same sort of structures remain in place. There's a great dismantling kind of happening here, a legal dismantling. And so I think it is truly very critical that people understand. And you know, I hate to feel like I'm being alarmist, but there are other rights that hang in the balance that are related to Roe and related to some of the arguments that were made in these cases that really do just fundamentally affect, I would say, more the organization of our society.
I said at the top of the show that I was mad. I'm not even sure how I'm processing that anger yet. But Nicole, how are you dealing with your anger?
So what do you do with anger? That's a great, yeah, I have some thoughts. It's hard to actually stay angry. It's hard to have all that stress in your life. It just makes you sick. It just doesn't really work that well. And so I think there's just lots of ways that we have to practice feeling the anger, noting the anger, transmuting the anger, channeling it into something productive or positive. Last night, I made collages, and so I spent a little time making a collage, right? And it's a paper collage. I think I cut out a lot of things from actually The Nation. And so it's like a fire plume with a hand and a guy holding a shotgun and two sets of eyes. One of them's also on fire, and the fiery eye is crying. It's very sad and kind of dark themes. Just finding ways to make beauty and experience art, to connect to others, to know that people are kind of fighting on the ground, are struggling together, that there's a long history of people, you know, fighting for rights, losing them, gaining them back. There's definitely something unique about what's happening now. The United States has really been made by successive struggles for power and for access, and I think that that will surely continue. Before we head out, we want to give some recommendations. So, Emily, what are you loving right now?
Okay, I was going to go with something highbrow that I'm reading or watching, but if I'm going to be totally honest with you and all the listeners, right now I'm loving gummy bears so much. I am eating them all the time. I find them extremely comforting and delicious. I like all different varieties. I like the Haribo a lot, the gold bears, but I'll also go sour. I'll go worm instead of bear, cola. I'm really all over the map. They bring me joy and comfort.
That is what we need in these times. I love it.
In these times.
As for me, I just binged a cute series on Netflix called Bonding. Happened to stumble upon it. Wasn't looking for it. It's about a dominatrix and her best friend, and they're navigating their relationships and consent and kink and intimacy and stigma and like figuring out who they are in the world. And it's honestly just delightful.
Well, that sounds awesome. I hadn't heard about that.
It's like two seasons, 16-minute episodes. It goes by like that. It's a little pick-me-up. So we couldn't leave you on this heavy topic without offering some constructive ways to engage. And so I want to shout out an incredible resource, a national network of abortion funds. So in the short term, while we are working on reclaiming our political power to cement this right once and for all, people are going to need abortions, and so they have to pay for them. So National Network provides a list of funds across the country. Their website is www.abortionfunds.org. And be sure to check out this great video on the site by graphic artist Molly Crabapple and Top Chef host Padma Lakshmi. That's our show this week. The Waves is produced by Shayna Raw.
Shannon Paulus is our editorial director. Alicia Montgomery is vice president of audio.
We'd love to hear from you. Email us at thewaves@slate.com.
The Waves will be back next week. Different hosts, different topic, same time and place.